Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining the Israel Project's conference call. The United Nations Security Council is slated to vote later today on an Egyptian-drafted resolution which questions the legal validity of all existing Israeli settlements and calls for a cessation of all settlement activity. To help make sense of this draft resolution, its significance, and the possible outcome of today's vote, we are glad to have with us Ambassador Dr. Dori Gold, former Director General of the Israeli Foreign Ministry and former Israeli Ambassador to the United Nations. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
We've received many pre-submitted questions, so I think we should just dive straight into it. Can Israel expect a U.S. veto, as in previous Security Council vote on this issue back in 2011? And what can you say about Israel's work behind the scenes to ensure this U.S. veto?
Well, ultimately, you don't know whether you're getting the veto until we're there, unless the United States announces its intentions. And as of yet, we have not heard what the U.S. is going to do, at least in public. But there's something very fundamental that is occurring here that I think will be a consideration for Washington. You know, back in 1995, Israel and the PLO negotiated what was called the Oslo II Interim Agreement. And that agreement established the fact that settlements would be addressed as an item for negotiations between the parties in the future. But we have a situation where Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president, is refusing to go into negotiations with Israel. So we can't address his concern if he won't talk to us, if he won't sit down at the peace table with us. And therefore, instead, he's running to the Security Council to take up his concerns. Of course, the Egyptians are doing the heavy work of the various UN representations. But nonetheless, the principle here is that Mahmoud Abbas is refusing to negotiate and instead running to the UN to take up the issue of settlements that apparently is of concern to the Arab world. The best way to address the issue of settlements would be for him to return to the negotiating table. Now, the United States many times has considered how best to address all the issues on the permanent status list. And it has been in the past the position of the U.S. government that Israel and the Palestinians should deal with these issues by speaking to each other and not by going to international fora. That's the heart of the problem of what is occurring today.
Okay. You mentioned Egypt. How does the fact that the resolution is being introduced by Egypt with support across the region sit with Prime Minister Netanyahu's message that the Arab states now see Israel as an ally and not as an enemy?
Well, fundamentally, the Arab states are an ally of Israel, but we have our differences. And Egypt has traditionally asserted its leadership in the Arab world by taking an activist stance on affairs at the United Nations. This began with Amr Moussa when he was foreign minister, and it has continued to this day.
Do you expect this resolution to have any effect on Israeli-Egyptian relations?
Look, I think the interests of Israel and Egypt are so unique and are at the, at the high point of their agenda that I don't expect this would change it. I mean, both countries are concerned with the expansion of Iranian influence across the Middle East, and both countries are concerned with the involvement of Daesh, of ISIS, in northern Sinai. So I think those are the paramount considerations, but we will have our differences from time to time. The Egyptians don't want to be in an awkward position where when an Arab issue comes up, they have nothing to say.
One journalist asks, this draft resolution seems to have a toned-down language compared to the resolution of 2011. It never refers to the settlements as illegal, as the previous one did, but rather it says the establishment of the settlements has no legal validity. Is there any difference in meaning and in practical effect between these resolutions?
Well, this is an effort to try, nonetheless, to say that the settlements are illegal. And frankly, there's a difference of opinion on this. I mean, the settlements became a legal issue in response to the Fourth Geneva Convention from 1949. And that convention was drafted because the U.S. and the Allies wanted to prevent a repetition of the practice of the Axis powers of evicting their populations or evicting populations from the areas that were under their control and forcibly transferring their own people into those territories. But that's not what is occurring with Israeli settlements, and that's why Israeli legal experts have argued for decades that the Fourth Geneva Convention doesn't apply de jure to the territories. Now, I understand that that's a minority position, that most of the legal advisors in the world think it does apply, and therefore they raise questions about the legality of Israeli settlements.
What are the practical implications for Israel if the resolution passes, which, again, we have to answer the question first, do we think that that the U.S. will use its veto or not? And what would you advise the government do in response if indeed this passes?
Well, there is a very pressing issue that, you know, Israel is struggling with hostile NGOs that want to advance a BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions agenda in Europe, for example. And what this resolution will do, it will leave in its wake a number of initiatives in the NGO community. It will require governments taking legal measures to restrict the actions of NGOs who really want to advance a boycott and divestment agenda.
But do you think we're going to get there, or is the veto pretty much a done deal?
As I said, as of now, I simply don't know whether the U.S. veto will be guaranteed. Israel received a U.S. veto in 2011, and it was very much appreciated. But I can't say now that we're, you know, 5 minutes to midnight before the Obama administration leaves office whether we'll get another veto at this time.
Do you think there's any connection between the consideration of this resolution on settlements to the Security Council and the movement of the arrangement bill at the Knesset?
I don't think so. In fact, what you're seeing is Israel is showing that when its Supreme Court raises questions about the legality of certain construction in the West Bank, it will in fact go so far as to remove those living in those homes so that property can be returned to its original owner. That is something exceptional. I want to stress that when you look around the world, the challenge of various countries, nationals, moving into territories that were contentious, that were disputed, has occurred in many other cases. We have Moroccans moving into the Western Sahara. We have the glaring case of Northern Cyprus, where a large Turkish population has moved in from Anatolia into northern Cyprus. Do you see any UN resolutions dealing with this? No. And, of course, in former Soviet Central Asia, where you have struggles between Armenia and Azerbaijan, this is occurring all the time. The problem in this case is not only that it is misapplied in the case of Israel, because the specific details of the Fourth Geneva Convention are not occurring here in the West Bank, but that what you have is a discriminatory approach, which says, let the UN focus on Israel and ignore all these other cases. That's unacceptable. That's not the way to protect international law.
You mentioned a little bit earlier that these are really the final weeks of President Obama in the United States. If this resolution is adopted, do you consider this a real threat for Netanyahu as Obama leaves and he's replaced by President-elect Trump?
Well, I mean, you can always get a situation where the U.S. government adopts a different position. It has different policies. That's occurring across the board as you move from the Obama administration to the Trump administration.
One final question. The Security Council vote comes just a few days after UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon stated publicly that the UN has a disproportionate focus on Israel. As a former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, how do you feel about this statement?
I think Secretary General, the outgoing Secretary General, has made a correct observation. When, as I said before, you have cases of occupied territories around the world where the occupying powers' residents or citizens have moved into those territories, and the UN says nothing, but the UN gets all focused about the case of Israel, that shows that you have a very serious problem with the UN. But even more so, we are now in the aftermath of the fall of Aleppo, and we are seeing ethnic cleansing across the board in Syria, where Sunni Arabs are scared to death, leaving their homes, moving into Turkey, into Europe. And we're seeing that the Iranians, using Shia population from Iraq and as far away as Afghanistan and Pakistan, are moving them into these areas to alter the demographic balance in the Levant. That is exactly what the Fourth Geneva Convention wanted to address. And that is exactly what is being ignored today by the UN. And so to have everybody obsessed about Israeli settlements, which frankly are not the case that the international community was worried about after World War II, and to have this tragedy in Syria ignored is a very bad development. It's bad for the UN. It's bad for the development of international law. And it's bad for the, developing a sense of justice about vulnerable populations losing their homes and becoming refugees across the world.
Okay, I think we'll leave it with that. Ambassador Dori Gold, former Director General of the Israeli Foreign Ministry and former Israeli Ambassador to the United Nations, thank you very much for this call, and thanks to all who dialed in.